Good afternoon. It's Tuesday. It's 5 o'clock. Welcome to this week's What Comes Next Live. It doesn't matter how well my heating works. It's going to be -7 tonight, so I'm wearing thermal vests and sweaters. For the non-centigrade speaking audience, as in my American friends, -7, that's cold. my guest this week, similarly attired, although slightly more elegantly than me, is Sheetal Shah, who I was introduced to as I moved into this area of the southern area outside London, and he has big plans for innovating the accountancy profession through his firm DSK Partners. This guy is looking into the future and making it happen now with speed. So over to you, Sheetal. Tell us a bit about yourself and let's talk about what comes next.
Yeah, thank you for the kind words and the introduction. I'm like you, I've got two jumpers on, thermal as well. And hopefully this next half an hour we'll talk and warm everyone's brains up and get everyone thinking. But so I'm an everyday boring accountant and I've been in accountancy for nearly 30 years. And it's been standard. Everything's just same old, and then about 10 years ago, technology came in and you saw glimpses of change that was happening. And I'm more now to dealing with all the digital side and innovation and making the team adapt and change and leadership and all these kind of things that we weren't seeing so much in the accountancy world. It was all a hierarchy of compliance and knowledge base and expertise. And what we found was, it was really interesting that for the last 20 years or so, I would say that the accountancy world has been saying that it's the end of compliance and the future of accountancy is about adding value to your clients and the service. And that's what everyone wants. And that's like with most industries, at end of compliance. But with accountancy, compliance has turned into our bread and butter and a bit of a cash cow. Mm-hmm. So even though we're meant to move away from it and do other exciting things, we've stayed in compliance because it pays the bills and businesses need it. And what's happened over the last few years that's changed everything, three main things. First is cloud technology and cloud accounting systems and all these lovely add-ons that you get. Outsourcing has came and changed it. And then this big push by governments all over the world to making tax digital, the first few steps they've done in the UK. Now that's pushed compliance, away from the firms into technology. And then what's happened recently is COVID, which has meant firms have had to move into the digital platform and think of a different way of working. And so with these new technologies and the margins have gone down, and what traditionally accountancy firms used to do is just, okay, we want to keep doing the compliance, let's hire some more people, and let's not invest, let's not innovate, let's not look into these technologies, because this technology means that we all have to change. Yeah, we all have to spend money and learn. And that's why do that when we've got all this, the tax man and all the compliance agencies are saying we just do what we do and we can print money. So, yeah, that change has rapidly happened. And because we've been now forced, COVID's forcing it to happen now, the new ways of working. For instance, it's snowing in London and you've got your thermal vest on. This time last year, if it happened, or 2 years ago, we'd be thinking, how are we going to get into the office? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now it's snowing. We've got a coffee. I'm working from home. We're not even thinking. And we're thinking, why would we go through all that headache to get to the office? Yeah. And that's what's happened in a short period of time. And so all these now firms, whether it's solicitors, accountancy firms, anyone in consultancies now have had to rapidly change their model. And that's been really, really hard. So it's not the fact we can buy off-the-shelf software, we can buy all these solutions, but getting the organization to use it, it's getting the people to use it. It's getting the leadership to use it. And you use it, and then you have to train. And it's really hard, especially in these conditions. Yeah. So what I've learned over the last 6 months is the problems are not singular. They're not just analytical. It's not, as an accountancy practice, you used to think issue is calculating the tax return or self-assessment deadline is an issue. And it's like Commonwealth problems like climate change. It's not a singular problem. And the way we approach it has to be totally different. And it's called adaptive intelligence. That's sort of the word right now is. And it's the way of looking at problems. And it's not just a singular thing. For example, in we've had the third lockdown in January the 4th was our third lockdown, I think it was. And most accountants had tax returns that they needed to submit by the end of January. And there was a load of panic. How do we open the offices up to collect all the data from our clients? And then that was one panic. Second panic was, yes, how are we going to get our people into the office to hit all our deadlines? Because we're struggling working from home. And the third issue was, well, how do we keep everyone safe if they're going to the office? And the fourth issue is, if clients are delivering records to the office, how do we keep them safe? Mm-hmm. And on and on. And it was just all these issues. And then what we realized was actually the main thing we needed to do is just keep our productivity. How do we keep our productivity, keep everyone safe? And we had to think of a different way of approaching. It weren't about keeping the offices open. It weren't about getting records dropped off. It wasn't about hitting the self-assessment deadline. Yeah. It was loads of things that we had to think about. And then we have this thing called groupthink. We all think outside the box and we all have to think, okay, we have to change the situation. Mm-hmm. That's how we manage change. We have to change the situation. So to get everyone to change the situation, you have to get everyone on board. You have to manage everyone's outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that generates creativity. So what we did was, okay, we don't need the offices open. There's a lot of Uber drivers that are not that busy. And we'll just get them to pick up all the records of the ones that we can't get digitally over. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 99% of our records digitally came over. We don't need everything that they send in boxes, but there's some things that we couldn't, some older clients that couldn't do it. So we set up, okay, we've got Uber drivers that are not doing anything. They can't, and they're COVID secure, and we can get them to pick it up, drop it to the office. And one day we COVID secure, a member of staff can go in there and digitalize everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we don't need the office ready for 5 days. But that was a different way of thinking. Most practices were setting up rotors, getting the offices COVID ready. And it just goes into panic mode and you need to take it back. And it's all about adaptive thing. And that's the whole thing with accountancy in any form of digitization. It's not just, okay, we need to install some software and start using it. How are we going to make the most use of it? How are we going to train everyone up? How are we going to get everything to be a habit? Yeah. So recently, because we've not opened our offices since March 2020, since 2 weeks before the official first lockdown. And then what we've done a survey to all our team and we thought we'd be struggling. In between this, we've done a merger. So in October, we merged with another firm that was bigger than us. And we've done all of it in lockdown, got all their team on board, retrained them, got the new platforms, new software in, imported all the client data, done everything offsite, got all the team building done, the training, everything working smoothly without anyone meeting face to face, which is a bit of a challenge. Yeah. And we were thinking, okay, what does the future of work look like? So we've done this merger. How are they feeling? What have they thought of the new DSK platform, the way we're working? And what have been their pain points? What have been the good points? And we've done this major thing. And one thing we thought would come out was that they would struggle during this merger working from home. And because there would be no face-to-face support, no one to, at the office to ask a question to.
Right.
Yeah, because that's really good. When you're in an office environment, you can ask a question to someone next to you. And then when we sent the survey out, actually that was the one thing we got right support. They always felt someone was on hand.
Hmm.
the support, even though it wasn't face to face. And then what they said was also that we were actually a lot more productive and there was less disruption. And we were really able to manage our time and flexibility, which you're hearing everywhere. But some of the things we thought we'd struggle at with support and collaboration actually came up really high. So so we managed to get the platform right, the tools right, and a new way of training and a new way of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
There were areas that we struggled with, and the learning the new way of doing things and bypassing the new way of doing things and hitting deadlines and stuff, that was still a bit of a struggle. But we realized is every time you bypass the system and the process, yeah, and it caused a bit of a bottleneck, a car crash. Yeah. And then taking a step back, it's like, it's not as simple for all businesses, whether you're an accountancy practice or a solicitor's firm or a retail shop. It's about getting this technology and adapting to it and getting everyone to change and get behind it, which that's the key to being successful in this digital world and being able to change. And
So you definitely don't look as old as I do, but we've both been in accountancy for 30 years.
Yeah.
Except the big difference, I qualified 31 years ago, right? And I stopped any kind of accountancy a few years after that. I'm one of the half of the qualified accountant population that only did it so I could get into business.
Okay.
But yes, 30 years ago, when I was an auditor, they were talking about, we need to be value added. And not just be ticking a box. I guess a couple of things occur to me. One is that you've not talked about technology, right? You've actually given a lot of information in a short period of time.
Sorry about that. I do ramble.
Don't apologize. You give a lot of really valuable information in a really short period of time. And it's all about leadership. And as I keep repeating, because I believe in repetition, is that leadership is about people. End of story. So it's not about the tech. The other, that's fascinating to me. And you talk about adaptive intelligence or other languages, growth mindset or first principles thinking and like, well, what's the problem we're looking to solve? And all of this around mental models, this is all stuff around, it's kind of leadership speak, but it's actually very valid. And another of my little trite catchphrases is business is simple, people are complex. I guess what occurs to me is if you've been around the game of accountancy for 30 years, exciting as it is, there's Monty Python jokes about boring accountants. My one is that, hi, my name's Tom. I'm a recovering accountant. The first step is admitting you have a problem. but you remain a practicing accountant or you partner in an accountancy firm. But my guess is you didn't just wake up a few years ago and accelerate it 6 months ago or a year ago and start focusing on people.
It's so from my background is I'm a qualified accountant ACCA and I'm FCCA. Mm-hmm. I am affiliate member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants England and Wales, but that's the only kind of education I've had. My highest GCSE was an E in English and that was that third attempt. I traveled the world selling t-shirts in Africa on beaches. I was a waiter in India, came back to the UK, loved retail, became a waiter in the UK and worked in retail and then became an administrator in accountancy practice. So I'm not a numbers person and I liked people basically and I like jobs that involve lots of people and communication. And I really, really like retail. And one of the things I see that today, back a long time ago, most students who are doing GCSEs or A-levels will get a Saturday job in a retail shop.
Right, yeah.
And you learn so many soft skills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, learn how to adapt and how to communicate and how to be a people's person because that's what it's all, I think, no matter what industry you're in, that's what it's all about. That's what's going to get you to the top, yeah? And so that was a bit more of my key base. So when I got into accounting, so I was this administrator, I liked all this stuff the accountants were doing, and I thought, okay, let me just do this. And I excelled. I passed the first attempt with my ACCA and stuff. But what really excited me wasn't doing the tax calculations or going out and audit, is then sitting down with the clients and talking about business growth. mm-hmm. looking at our practice, how do we empower our employees? And that's what I've been doing for the last 10, 15 years in accountancy. So
for the audience that don't fall into the fairly narrow box of qualified accountant, your path through that is really, really remarkable. ACCA is absolutely on the par with chartered accountancy. It is a form of chartered accountancy. And it's the only one that's available to be done if you don't follow the conventional path of getting good GCSE yeah. levels university. I did that conventional path, although along the way I did an awful lot of customer service oriented stuff, which became most of my career. What I can say is I did the A-levels, I did the degree, but the process of doing the accountancy exams is so much tougher than a university degree. It's really, really yeah. savage. And ACCA, if I recall, can take people 6 or 7 years. And the idea of passing all those first time is sailing through. So the level of and I'm a reasonably bright guy, the level of technical knowledge and technical ability and then deduction and processing ability is pretty vast to become a chartered accountant. And there is a joke, but with some seriousness, that most don't really have much in the way of people skills. So I think if we then move on to the piece you're broadly talking about is it's not enough just to say, okay, there are there's cloud computing, there's outsourcing, there's digitization, et cetera, and there are systems and processes you can buy off the shelf, but that's not enough. What you're dealing with is what Professor Carol Dweck talks about, growth versus fixed mindset. And it's really understandable to have a highly fixed mindset if you put years and years of very hard work to qualify in a profession that is highly regarded, and you've done very well, thank you very much. And the solution is to if you have more work, hire more people and charge them out at 3 or 4
this
times
is it
cost you to hire. And my guest last week, Pat Kramer from BDO Canada, in slightly larger firm, but the same problems because people are people. You know, he saw when I was working with him 7 or 8 years ago, he saw the coming storm of zero accounting, for example.
Yeah.
But how do you move? How do you turn around a supertanker when you've had a very successful business?
This is it. We're stuck with compliance. That was our cash cow.
So in a much larger environment, in my experience supporting him in building a foundation to turn that supertanker around, it's very cool. I know you listened to the show. It was very cool hearing him talk about how they've thrived with across 100 plus offices in Canada, by focusing on people. And what he didn't specifically say, I don't think, is that one of the platforms for the, I don't mean tech platforms, but one of the focal areas for the firm that were determined back in 2014 was innovation.
Yeah.
And then Tom's definition of innovation is doing different things and doing things differently. So I'm interested then in what have you learned around behavior change in professionals in a firm? What's worked, what hasn't worked, and what do you think people can learn that they can apply when they look at it?
It's really hard. I think what we've got to realize in a professional firm that, like most other businesses, innovation happens at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And cultivating that and nurturing that talent. Where we've done really well was, as a firm, we went to this cloud technology, and then we've done the outsourcing model. And there's a lot of people outside the UK that are really technically good and analytically good and can do a lot of the work that we can do here. And then with the digital platform, we done a lot of the heavy lifting was done and now outside the organization, we outsourced. Which meant that the people I had now, their skill base had to change from doers to being thinkers and being creative. It freed up their time, but now they have to be client facing. Yeah. And they have to learn all these soft skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before, everything we looked at was technical, technical, technical. Yeah. And then because we empowered them, we've got these digital platforms, they've got some free times. We get them a lot more closer to the client. Yeah. Than they are. So it's not that you got the CEO at the top telling the managers what to do. Yeah. the managers are making sure the team are doing it. Yeah. Ours is like, you got the CEO at the bottom, just making sure we've got that culture and that environment to innovate. Yeah. And we don't have managers. We've got a flat organization and our teams are client facing and the customers and the clients are pushing us where to go. Yeah. So what you realize is, and again, it's nothing about the software. You have to change your organizational structure and where people sit, their duties, their roles. So for instance, we don't have in our organization, we don't have an admin team. We've got an onboarding team and support. Yeah. We don't have bookkeeping and juniors. We have digital enablers. Their job is to just enable all the clients to be digital and be the support service. Because I don't need them doing double entry. Well, I don't need them to do what they're doing. So they're now doing the enabling. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't need seniors. I need managers, workflow managers that see everything. Yeah. That can intervene, that can unblock. Yeah. And be really customer focused. So we've got rid of all the titles and we give everyone new duties. And it was really, really, really hard because it's everyone stuck in their way of what they've done for the last 10, 20 years. And this is how an industry should be or an organization should be or a certain business should be. Yeah. And again, everyone was more really is technical, technical, technical. But I go, look, Google can do technical. We can go to Tolly's handbooks and now Xero does a technical. Yeah. And then getting the mindset to being able to know where to get the technical data and handle the technical data and apply it to the client scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instead of regurgitating technical data. Yeah. So all these soft skills had to change. Yeah. And you had to get them into good habits. Yeah. But the big thing was to get them into good habits. Yeah. We had to have the leadership stay on, and it's everything came down from the leadership. So that's the way the leadership supports the organization and supports that change is just by empowering and make sure everyone stays within this new way of working, the new way of thinking. We don't revert to old habits. Once the leadership doesn't revert to old habits and start using new ways, everyone else will.
Right. Leading by example.
There's a lot again rambling there because
I pull a couple of thought threads from that. One is that when I've done a lot of work with leadership teams, it's often around vision, culture, and values because those are anchors that even if circumstances change, even if a black swan event like a COVID happens, you don't have to change your strategy at that level.
Yeah.
And one of the things that always have to bring in the people with the authority and accountability and responsibility. One definition of leadership, the people at the top. Right? And the language I use is the fish rots from the head.
Yes.
Sounds horribly emotive, but if they're not bought in,
yeah,
nothing ever happens. But leading by example, and you also said something which a mentor of mine, Peter Lederer, talks about as flipping the pyramid.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of background in my experience. You say customer service, anything customer service at whatever level of responsibility, seniority is incredibly valuable, skill to have. If you do it when you're 16, 18, 20, whatever, it's great. But he turned around Glen Eagles Hotel from a loss making hotel that closed in the winter to a place that held the G8 Summit and the Ryder Cup Golf.
Oh, wow.
And, at one point he got a letter in from other London based clients. That said they'd had a terrible meal. It was a real problem and they were going to tell all their friends. And there was an adage in customer service you're probably aware of that bad news travels 20 times as fast as good. So you can't afford to have a Glen Eagles with a bad news story going around London. You need to make sure but it's not a matter of going out and punishing people. It's going to say what actually happened here and how can we prevent it happening in the future?
Yeah.
So let's say who was the waiter on that table? So as a general manager, he went to see the waiter. And the waiter said, I knew they're going to be a problem from the minute they came in. So what did you do about it? He says, I wasn't authorized to do anything. I just had to serve them. Anyway, they basically were in a situation where a young man or woman would come in as a waiter. They would, put their coat at the back door. They'd walk in. They'd just do their job. They had no authority without going through one or two levels of hierarchy, even within the restaurant. Yeah. So he turned around, got all his managers in, and this was a number of years ago, and he said, as of now, every member of staff has unquestioned authority to spend up to £300 on any situation, which at the time was basically the cost of a night in a room or a meal for a group of people. It's quite a high-end hotel. Right? And he said, look, my whole principle is you are there. We have to invert this pyramid. So instead of you being at the top, you're at the bottom. Your entire job is to lead your people. A client of mine with COO of a 20,000 staff company around the world, which is involved in engineering design, one of her famous lines she uses is, what do you need and how can I build it for you?
Yeah.
And it doesn't, that's not to the clients, it's to any member of staff.
Yeah. Wow.
They have to have an answer, because when she walks into an office anywhere in the world, okay, not during COVID, she'll say, what do you need and how can I build it for you?
Yeah. So, and you give that mindset to the start of the team. And what I found was really interesting is, so they were more client facing. They were giving the independence to make the decision. We're just telling them, look, you manage the outcomes. We want the customer to the service, not the partner. Mm-hmm. It's all client facing. Yeah. And we will support you. Yeah. And you can make small decisions. And we've got the environment where there's feedback loops and we see the visibility and we can come in just in case they bite off a bit more, they can chew. But it's not like we come in with a stick. We give them, okay, why did this happen? Here's some support that might help make you. Next time around it could have happened. You might need some more support and stuff. Yeah. So we're creating that environment so they can make these decisions. And then what we noticed was that they weren't making quick, instinctive decisions. Yeah. Us with experience, we make instinctive, quick decisions, and it's affected by so many biases. These guys are still learning. And right. So what we find out is that they do this thing called, like I've learned recently, design think.
Yep. Yeah.
So they find out what the problem is. They don't just come up with and it could be something else. Yeah. And then they'll engineer a solution to that problem. Yeah. And it doesn't have to go be all up the way up the chain. The customer's happy. It's like that £300 you just said he's got the person had to spend, but you're giving that freedom to go and find out. And there could be so many variables and find out what are the main pain points and what are the main issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you've got all these tools and resources and you fix it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really, so for us, you'd think it's simple, but the way we've organized business and ran business for so many years, it's not that simple.
Yeah. Well, I do simplify into simple phrases. And one of them is my thing on the 6 most dangerous words in business. We've always done it this way.
Yeah.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned biases,
because
there is, I often refer to the work of Kahneman and Tversky, which is about heuristics, they call it.
Yeah.
And there are 17 different forms of bias, in terms of how we think. And if you've been at it for 10, 20, 30 years.
I think it's 70 now. Yeah. So
this is how you do it.
Yeah. And you don't understand. And even like you've seen it with the government's approach to, COVID and our approach to climate change, and it's people in power and their biases, they're kicking in. Yeah. And they're not thinking outside the box. They're not doing that design think. And you can see they're not doing that adaptive intelligence. It's just like quick solutions based on what they think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's driven by not the science or not the expertise or not the people at the bottom. It's not the people that can innovate, that can come up with solutions. It's driven by the wrong people. It's just.
Well, I think I'll leave not a negative, but a dose of pragmatic reality of my experience is that when you're looking at radical change like that, it won't fit for everybody. Some people just want it to be the way it was. Now the world is changing, and repetitive routine tasks like tax returns and compliance are going to go to the lowest cost denominator using IT systems. So value added will change. So careers will change, but there will be a lot of people running professional service firms who just will go, I don't get it. I don't want it. I want it to be the way it's always been. I want to be working on the client files. Staff need to know their job. And ultimately they'll leave. And that has to be, they'll find their own niche. There's always the diffusion of innovation curve. There's always going to be laggards who want to use rotary dial phones. And that's not a problem. It's just that other people will move further forward. And what will happen is businesses like yours will both retain and attract the people who are keen to do this. And you will have this constant shift as you move forward. So what do we do? Because if you've got a number of partners in acquisition, what do you do with the partners who want to stay? What do you do with the ones who want to go? And that's just, I don't know your business. I'm just being generic, but that's, so it's not all, rosy. But it is fascinating that you spoke for 10 minutes when we started, and everything you're talking about was leadership, and everything you're talking about was is going to sleep at night, not thinking about the technical solutions. And what I wanted to emphasize to people was that, that there is a lot of technical skill involved and knowledge involved in doing the work of an accounting firm. And but that has to be a given. So that at this point, it has to be what Americans call table stakes. It has to be, this is what gets you to the poker table, right? And at that point, so what makes you different is how do you read the dealer?
I've
never used a poker analogy before. My friend Frank Basto will laugh at this. He's a poker player. But it is about people. So I think you just modeled that really.
And
what you said for people.
Yeah, and little thing like you said about the retention, which is so key, because a lot of people don't want to change. And like, we're having discussions with businesses that want to open up their office, and they know there's going to be a new way of doing things. So it might be that we change the way we use our office. We only have our office, we rent offices and stuff. And they're talking about premises and locations and stuff, but the crux of the matter is, it's not about opening the offices and that. It's basically about retaining your staff. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Yeah, because you only open it for your staff to go in there, for them to work, to collaborate, yeah? But the question's wrong. Yeah, it's not about these locations. It's about how you're going to create an environment that's going to retain talent, simply, yeah? And you keep your productivity going, yeah? And it has to be a new way of looking at stuff.
Plus, it's asking the right questions.
Exactly.
I'm just writing one of my guests a few weeks ago was Jeff Raker, and he's written a book with 30 questions, and it's all about asking the right questions. If you ask the right question, that's a brilliant way of putting it. You ask that question. Part of the solution might be, I talk about WFA, work from anywhere.
Yeah.
It might be, we will have a certain number of office space. I have a client in the City of London that's planning to double their office space.
Oh, wow.
But the question they're asking themselves is that they use that to solve for. It's not, how do we get more people in the office? They've realized they've got this huge client base, and those clients can learn from each other, right, in a social environment. So where they're going to double the space, because once all this happens, they want a free-flowing space where the client interactions can happen, plus those clients can interact with each other, and they can have these random collisions. The actual amount of work that the staff do on the client for the clients is going to stay wherever the staff want to do it, which will largely be at home. We've had this missed opportunity. We've been going to see our clients all the time, but we've never let the clients see each other. Then we start running Zoom events.
Yeah.
And they go into breakout rooms, and they go, how come you never introduced me to this person before? And they go, right, we're going to have a hybrid of this so that when things come back, we're going to actually take out double the space. Oh, and by the way, entrepreneurially, how inexpensive do you think a few thousand square feet in the City of London is going to be relative to the
place? Absolutely. Yeah.
They're going to be like, get something near London Bridge or something, and off you go. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is, we've gone a bit over time, so I better honor your time. We could have talked for hours, and so many brilliant thoughts there. I hope you share more of that with the world, either in writing or on webinars. I know you've done one with a mutual friend a while ago.
Yeah.
So people should be looking out for Sheetal Shah of DSK.
Thank you very much.
Who's innovating and leading all over the place in what many of us perceive to be quite a staid profession, but that's some really radical change you're seeing. So I'll leave you with the last word.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that, just rambling on. I hope the audience enjoyed it. But that's one of my issues, just keep on rambling. But as long as it made sense to someone.
Well, I think I made a lot of sense to me. I hope the audience, the small audience live, and the larger podcast audience later loves it. So thanks a lot, Sheetal.
And good luck, and stay safe, everyone. Cheers. Thanks.